This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. Bill Clinton said in an interview with NPR yesterday that a lack of reliable intelligence kept him and his administration from getting Osama bin Laden. The former president also proposed creating a joint intelligence office to better anticipate future al-Qaeda-like attacks. Clinton spoke with NPR after signing more than 2,000 copies of his book, My Life, at a Fifth Avenue New York bookstore. Some buyers had lined up 24 hours in advance.
One man came through and said, "Now I want good penmanship." I said, "If it's got good penmanship, no one will believe I signed it." Be right back.
After several full-body stretches, Bill Clinton moved to a small back room to speak with NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams.
After the 9/11 attacks, Clinton was criticized for not doing more while in office to get bin Laden. Al-Qaeda was implicated in the first bombing of the World Trade Center, the attacks on the USS Cole, and U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. Clinton ordered airstrikes in Afghanistan and Sudan, but he never got bin Laden, and he never disrupted bin Laden's terror network.
For the last 3 years I was president, I'd say we talked about Osama bin Laden, well, several times every week in all of our national security meetings, even before the African embassy bombing, and certainly afterward. And it was a source of enormous frustration to me. Then there were three other times after the August 98 incident when I thought we were going to bomb and when at the last minute the CIA recommended that we not because they didn't have confidence in their information.
Do you feel that the intelligence agencies failed?
Well, they didn't succeed in either getting bin Laden or telling us where he was. And I was sometimes frustrated at thinking that they were recommending that I not do things more than that I do.
You write that U.S. intelligence lacked what you call in the book paramilitary capability.
That's correct. They did. The CIA at one point wanted to launch an operation to send some paramilitary forces into Afghanistan to get bin Laden. They finally concluded that they didn't have the ability to do that, so they contracted with Afghan tribals to do the job. But they were never able to do it. And I don't suppose we should be surprised. I mean, bin Laden's got a lot of money. He's very well organized, highly intelligent, and well protected. The military, during my time, was opposed to going into Afghanistan with a commando-type operation because we simply didn't have very good intelligence about where he was. And they thought we had a real possibility of having special forces stranded all over the country with no way to get them out.
George Tenet, who was one of your appointees, has resigned. He's being criticized widely. Do you think that there should be a restructuring of American intelligence organizations so that you have a czar of intelligence over CIA, over FBI, over all the military units that have intelligence capabilities?
I think there is something to recommend it. On balance, my answer to you is yes. Now, having said that, the potential downside is that if you rationalize everything under one roof, that it may encourage too much homogeneity of opinion. Intelligence is not a science. It's part art, it's part politics, it's smell, it's feel, and it's weighting the things relatively differently. So if we're going to reorganize it, that's good. Everybody will talk to one another and you'll have rational budgets. But if it leads to homogeneous opinions in an area that's not science, that's a mistake. One thing that I think ought to be done, it may be being done now, is I'd like to see an office of central kind of doomsday planning that's really secret, where I know nothing about it, you know nothing about it, and they're thinking about what kinds of things could be done and how do we stop it now. I mean, look, Tom Clancy wrote a book about an airplane crashing into the Capitol.
True.
8 years before 9/11. There are, in all these agencies, they have people that think about this stuff. And we ought to let them go places wherever their imagination goes, because what do we know about bin Laden? We got three big operations he's pulled now. He pulled the Africa embassy bombing, the USS Cole, and the 9/11. Now, what do all three of those things have in common? Clever people look for gaps in our defenses. And then as soon as we close one gap, they went to another. That's his MO.
Now, you had a meeting, you say in the book, with President Bush at the time of the transition from your administration to his.
Yeah, the standard meeting that you do.
But you mentioned Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden to him, and in the book you write, he changed the subject.
Yeah, and I don't want to mislead anybody. I think a lot of people read that like he was completely disinterested. I didn't know whether he was disinterested or not. He knew we had an hour or two to talk, and he had several things he wanted to discuss. So I don't want to imply that. But I knew that he was being advised by highly experienced people on foreign policy.
Who are you talking about? Condoleezza Rice?
Condi, Cheney, and Wolfowitz. And Secretary Powell, I think, saw the world more like I did. But I don't want to say that. I want to get him in trouble. But but the point is, a lot of these folks had been really important players in the Reagan-Bush years. And it was natural for them to be fixated on Iraq and on missile defense.
Natural because of the first Gulf War or because of the threats against his father?
Because of the first Gulf War, because before the first Gulf War in the 80s, the Reagan administration supported Saddam even when he used chemical weapons, and he sort of didn't stay bought. Then he pulled that stunt on trying to kill the president's father. So all I was trying to do is to use some portion of the time I had with the president-elect to tell him that based on my reading of the intelligence for 8 years and dealing with the real problems, I thought that he would have more trouble with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, with the absence of a peace process in the Middle East, with the fact that India and Pakistan were nuclear powers and the Pakistani army was riddled with people sympathetic with the Taliban and bin Laden, with North Korea if we didn't solve that problem because they couldn't feed themselves, but there were world-class missile and bomb builders, and then with Iraq.
Now, you have suggested that neoconservatives like Cheney, Wolfowitz, and others have persuaded this president that it's possible to bring democracy into the Arab world.
First of all, since the end of the conflict with Iraq, which, as you know, I'm on public record here, I do not believe should have been triggered until after Hans Blix completed his inspections and said that Saddam had refused to cooperate. But whether we agreed with this or not, we all got a stake in it succeeding now.
Because of the cost of American lives?
We got over 600 dead Americans since the conflict was over. If you can have an Iraq that is peaceful and secure and has a pluralistic, generally representative government, then I think, at a minimum, the Iraqi people will be able to resist terror and will have a better life over the long run. I think it is quite likely that because of the sort of secular history of Iraq, that it could, over the years, be a force for reform in other Arab states. The trick now for the president is, and for if John Kerry's elected president, and I hope he will be, I'm doing what I can to help him, is how we can continue to internationalize the Iraq effort, and we have to keep a strong enough presence in Afghanistan to help President Karzai and to continue to do our part to try to hem up and eventually capture bin Laden.
Former President Bill Clinton, speaking in an interview during the book tour for his newly released autobiography, My Life. Juan Williams, NPR News, New York.
Tomorrow, part two of Juan's interview with Bill Clinton. Excerpts and reviews of the book are at npr.org.